Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Orbits by Jeremy Scott. Narrated by Eric Michael Summerer. Most of this story is told from my own perspective, but some events were relayed to me in detail by close friends and family after the fact. 1. Stars. The stars were lovely tonight. There were many times I took my newfound sight for granted, but starry nights were not among them. I was no longer blind. Science had finally created an artificial eye implant, and I was one of the first 100 to undergo the procedure. That alone made me feel entitled, though the truth was that the procedure had been entirely developed by custodian scientists, and we'd yet to share the treatment with the general public because, well, the general public wanted us dead. Most of us were dead. Anyway, having sight was nice. It was everything I'd always dreamed it would be. I was no longer hindered by my body's inadequacies. I was fully capable as a human. Beyond that, I was even more capable than most humans, as my implanted eyes came with thermal vision, infrared, and night vision capabilities. I could even save video of what I was seeing and download it to a computer, though I'd yet to make use of that talent. But I was still unsettled. I snapped myself out of my stargazing. Winnie, when was Pluto's designation changed from planet to dwarf planet and why? I said, much the same way some parents say, did you finish your homework?
2005, she began, before correcting herself. No, 2006. And the designation was changed because of the discovery of several other bodies in the Kuiper Belt that were the same size as Pluto.
That is correct. Good job. All right, Hen, I said loudly, just before chopping another piece of wood with a metallic thud. Most influential invention of all time. Go.
Hen was short for Henry, and he was my youngest child at 12 years old.
Johannes Gutenberg, Henry replied instantly. Inventor of the printing press. The ability for newspapers, magazines, and other publications to rapidly print many copies at once drastically changed the flow of information and the power of those who held it.
I heard him shuffle down the line in our backyard garden, harvesting greens and veggies as he went.
Acceptable answer, I said, loading up another chunk of wood to slice. Winnie?
It's so obvious that it's Alexander Graham Bell that it's not even funny. Communication over long distances in real time? That's relevant even today. Whereas Henry's newspapers are dying left and right, most of them dead already.
Her voice came from several yards into the orchard, where she was harvesting apples. I liked to combine schoolwork with chores. It worked the body and the mind, and it ultimately gave the kids more free time in the late evenings to do their own thing. Winnie, 14 years old, was short for Winifred, the first name of the most important school teacher I'd ever had, Mrs. Crouch. My Winnie was as impatient as she was whip-smart. She was enough like her mother to make it hard for me sometimes, and then the rest of her was more like her Uncle Patrick, quick, fiery, energetic. She was a handful, and she was more precious to me than almost anything.
Rebuttal, I barked.
Henry was ready.
Just because print journalism is dying in the modern world doesn't negate the original invention's importance. That's like saying that the Beatles' influence dies if and when the government outlaws rock and roll. The printing press gave birth to journalism in America, which is still alive and well, despite having moved from print to radio and TV to the internet, and then back to radio after the liquidation.
Henry was named for my late best friend, whom we'd lost in battle in Washington, D.C., back when we were still teenagers. I was ultimately both glad and regretful that I had given my son the name. It served as a constant reminder of what I considered one of my biggest failures, but my friend Henry's actions there also ensured his name would never mean anything short of hero. The kids and I had most everything we needed right here, I repeatedly told myself. A nearby stream provided water that we boiled to purify. We had a garden for vegetables and greens. Wild boar, fish from the stream, and venison from wild deer made up most of our protein diet. We had a small smokehouse to cure some of the meat. We had chickens and rabbits we tended as well,
providing us with eggs and even more options for meat. Besides, the kids had never known anything other than this, I constantly reminded myself. They'd never known central heat and air, cable television, or email. They were so young when I'd moved us out here, they'd grown up thinking our kind of remote farm cabin living was the norm, or at least I hoped that they had. The only time we needed to go to town was for gasoline to power the truck, the mower, and the generators, and to stock up on feed and other small farm basics. And look, town these days was a pretty limited description. Depending on which direction we drove, there was one general store still open, one bank, and one bar at most, a general store at the very least. Most everything had closed, not only here, but everywhere. Everyone was scared. Everyone was wary. Shop owners looked you over more, and some began locking up their merchandise behind padlocked gates. I'd been here with the kids for a decade, so the locals knew me and continued to sell to me, even if some adopted clandestine methods of exchanging product for payment. Our cottage was mostly solar-powered, and when the sun refused to cooperate, there were two water wheels in the stream that provided backup power, while also serving as mills, providing us with flour and cornmeal. Beyond all that, we also had a 3-year supply of canned goods. Short of an apocalypse, we were set to withstand most any event. And these days, there were some wild rumors about coming catastrophes. "Victory to Henry this round," I said, as I heard my daughter groan. "All right, Wynn, your turn." "I'm almost done," she replied, dumping a few more apples into her basket. "Give me something easy." She smiled and leaped back up into the nearest tree. Paul Revere was not the only rider who—
"William Dawes, Samuel Prescott, and Israel Bissell,"
she replied confidently, racing over to my location on the back porch to set down her basket of apples for approval. I looked down at the basket, then back up at my daughter. "I think you're getting faster by the day." Winnie was gifted with super speed, just like her favorite uncle, Patrick. Of course, she'd only met Patrick a few times, but those visits had left a lasting impression. There was a strong bond between custodians that shared the same power. Winifred talked most, above all other subjects, about reuniting with her Uncle Patrick. After that, it was boys. I wasn't a fan of either topic, but I definitely preferred talking about her uncle.
"Can I be dismissed now?" she asked.
"Indeed," I agreed. She dashed off to her room. Henry's power was laser-based, and I'd never seen anything quite like it. He typically shot lasers from his palms, but rather than being offensive weapons, those lasers were used like force fields, pushing back against a target, but also sometimes enveloping a target momentarily, as though defending it from harm. He was still young, his powers were still manifesting, but for now his abilities seemed defensive in nature. It bothered him like you couldn't imagine. He wanted to be offensive and brutishly strong, like most boys would. Since I'd gone off the grid when the kids were quite young, I'd had years to debate whether or not to tell them about their powers, and if so, exactly what to tell them. I'd settled on a slightly modified version of the truth. "You have superpowers, because I do and your late mother did. She died in an explosion fighting against the very man who now wants to wipe out all those with powers, which is why we live here in the woods, in secret." Outside the cottage, our family owned several acres of unoccupied forest all around us in every direction, allowing for excellent exploration, education, and even hunting and fishing. The kids and I could run and yell and enjoy this nature around us with relative assurance that we would never be discovered. Sure, there were custodians seeking satellites, so we heard, but those were on a schedule we could follow, and the rumored drones would be caught by our motion sensors miles before they got to our cabin, which had a camouflage roof we could set up in 30 seconds. Inside, there were limited resources for my children to explore their youth and their superpowers. Physical space was the biggest limitation, as it turned out. Our cabin had 3 bedrooms, but only 1.5 floors, so all the bedrooms were in earshot of one another. If one of us snored or had a nightmare, we'd all hear it.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?